Can you believe it's been 4 years since the world shut down? It was March 15th, 2020, when everyone was put on lockdown and the COVID-19 pandemic began. And we're still seeing a list of effects, both directly from having had the virus and indirectly from side effects to how we work and live our lives.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Wellness and Prevention, Medical Innovation, the Informed Side of Care. Welcome to Baptist Health Talk.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Janot, your host for today's discussion, coming to you from the Baptist Health Newsroom. Although the federal government canceled the coronavirus public health emergency just last year, the ripple effects of COVID-19 are still being felt across the country. From an alarming rise in cancer diagnoses and other diseases, to lingering brain fog and heart issues, how the virus itself has evolved, the list goes on and on. Here to talk about the direct and indirect effects of the coronavirus, we have two Baptist Health experts, Chief of Head and Neck Surgery at Baptist Health Miami Cancer Institute, Dr. Jeffrey Young, and Melanie Rodriguez, Certified Physician Assistant with Baptist Health. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Now, before we dive into today's subject, I want to remind our viewers now to send your comments, send your questions into the comments. We're here for you, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have. All right, so Melanie, let's dive into this. We're 4 years in, and it looks like we could probably all agree that COVID is kind of blending in with the flu or even maybe a bad cold. How has it evolved, and what might COVID symptoms look like now if you're starting to feel really bad?
Yeah, definitely. So you're certainly right. It has evolved. The flu and COVID actually have a lot of symptoms that overlap, and it's honestly sometimes impossible to tell what a person has when they come into the clinic. Even sometimes we've had patients have both influenza and COVID at the same exact time. Luckily for us, we have a test now that can test for both flu and COVID, and it's just one swab, and it comes back usually in about 15 minutes. So the symptoms we're typically seeing, like fever, coughing, shortness of breath, headache, fatigue, and body aches are kind of the main symptoms we're seeing. Since the virus has evolved, we're really not seeing the loss of smell and taste anymore as a viable symptom as it used to be a couple of years ago.
I remember that one was kind of like a big fear for some people. I don't want to lose my taste and smell.
Absolutely. So, yes.
Dr. Young, during the lockdown, many people skipped out on doctor's appointments and their regular screenings for fear of being around people who could potentially have COVID, which is understandable. What are the real-time effects that you're seeing in your field?
So I think that, you know, with that, because people weren't going to their regular checkups and having their regular screening exams, we did see a delay in a lot of diagnoses of cancer. It wasn't that more people were getting cancer during that time. It's just that we weren't diagnosing it because we weren't seeing those people. So they tended to come in at later stages for certain types of cancer, as well as people who may have had symptoms that they just didn't feel was urgent enough. For leukemias, lymphomas, some of those symptoms are fatigue and tiredness. So maybe it wasn't overwhelming enough to want to go seek out an emergency room or an urgent care, but it smoldered for long enough. Then finally, when the pandemic kind of started to ease and people were getting back into visits, that they came in with those symptoms and got worked up and then got those different diseases discovered.
Now, Melanie, it wasn't only cancer diagnoses that were going undetected. People were putting off their screenings, other screenings as well. What impact did that have on our personal health, and what can be done to just get back to normal?
Sure. I mean, I think we all felt the social isolation. We spent more time at home. Our gyms were closing, so decrease in physical activity. There have been studies shown that alcohol and tobacco consumption actually increased during the pandemic. So I think we all kind of needed to do a complete reset on things. I think visiting your primary care doctor would be a perfect place to start. During those visits, they would start with vital signs. So that includes weight, temperature, blood pressure check. Then your primary care doctor would start an assessment and also take some blood work. They could do complete blood count. They could check your liver and kidney functions, your thyroid function, and see if you're at risk for diabetes and high cholesterol, which can directly affect your overall well-being and health.
So Dr. Young, you gave us a little bit of clarity on, you know, the delay in diagnoses. And a lot of this came to light once the height of the pandemic wrapped up. Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what was it that these health officials like yourselves discovered with these delays?
Sure, absolutely. We actually published our results on the American Journal of Surgery. We looked at three different cancers. We're looking at several more, and then that data is to come. We looked at melanoma, breast, and colorectal cancers, and specifically. And we looked at not just the immediate post-pandemic, which is 3 to 6 months like a lot of other papers did. We looked more long-term. We looked out 12 months. We looked out 22 months. And we wanted to kind of get a feel for how people were presenting in those times compared to the pre-pandemic times. And what we really saw was that in melanoma, we didn't see a huge difference. In the first 12 months, we saw a little bit more melanoma diagnoses, but they were just delayed diagnoses from people not being able to come in. But if you think about it, skin cancers, you can take a picture of your skin, you can get those things to your doctor, right? So they might be able to tell you when something is concerning. Breast cancer, we saw an increase over 2 years in the size of the breast cancer. So cancer has different stages. So the T stages are talking about the tumor sizes. So we saw an increase in T2 breast cancers that came out within those first 2 years. So, you know, cancers were presenting at a little bit later stage. Now, breast cancers can be detected by self-exam. So people might still be feeling, and if they're educated in self-exam, doing their exams and feeling something, but it just took them a little longer to get to the doctor to get it diagnosed. Colorectal cancer is diagnosed with colonoscopy, right? Or there are there are some at-home screenings. You may have seen advertisements on TV where you can, you know, send in a sample and they can use it to detect that kind of cancer. But it's a little bit more active detection. With those, we saw a huge increase in more locally advanced disease. So T4 tumors, those biggest tumors, were the ones that were showing up late. And we think that that was because they just went undetected in the early stages post-pandemic. People weren't able to get those at-home screenings. They weren't able to get their colonoscopies. So the disease presented later T stage. And we also saw an increase in nodal disease in colorectal cancer.
Have things kind of caught up? Are people kind of back to
we are those things out? Yeah, it's a great question. And we are seeing things level out.
Wonderful. Now, let's talk a little bit about long COVID or lingering symptoms of the virus that can last for years. Those things have affected millions of people around the world, and it's still a mystery to a lot of researchers even to today. So what do we know about long COVID these days, and what sort of treatments are these patients getting?
Sure. So that's definitely a hot topic right now, long COVID. So as things are kind of getting a little bit better with the acute phase of COVID, people are now realizing I have palpitations, I have fatigue, I can't exercise as I used to. Maybe I'm a little bit more forgetful, I have brain fog. So long COVID is really a diagnosis of exclusion. So you need to start by seeing your primary care provider or a specialist, depending on what your symptom is first. And they need to do a few checks just to make sure that there is nothing more serious underlying. And then maybe we can go ahead and say this is more of an effect of long COVID. You've been affected by COVID, and now these symptoms are lasting for longer than 4 weeks after the acute phase. So as far as treatment for long COVID, there's not one treatment that would go for all of those symptoms. It would be more so treating it symptomatically.
Just important for folks at home to just check in with your doctor and just stay on top of things.
Yes, of course.
Many people with cancer were very afraid of getting COVID during the height of the pandemic because of, you know, their weakened immune system. Should cancer patients should they be more cautious nowadays, or does, you know, getting COVID look different with people with cancer now?
So that's a very good question. And I think that what you have to remember is that not all cancer patients are the same. So there are some drugs that do decrease the immune system's response to COVID and other viruses. There are some treatments. Our bone marrow transplant patients are very susceptible to infections, viral and bacterial. But our patients in remission or our patients who just had surgery, they're going to be affected like you and me, right? So I think educating the patient on what their risks are is the most important thing, because there are patients that really should be wearing masks and should be very cautious, not just for COVID, but the flu or any other, you know, possible viral bacterial infections. So I think making sure the patient understands what their risks are and helping them, you know, achieve those risks. Like we keep, you know, areas of our building, you know, we're still with masks for those particular patients to keep them safe.
Sure, sure. Now let's go ahead and answer some of the more top researched questions that we're seeing on the internet. So the first one, and you mentioned a little bit about this, Melanie, mm-hmm. is brain fog really an effect of COVID?
It is, certainly. So we see it all the time with our patients. And some of them think that it's just them. But once they find out that other people are too experiencing these symptoms of forgetfulness, sleep disturbance, difficulty concentrating, sometimes difficulty completing tasks, maybe simple things like forgetting someone's name that you work with regularly, it is certainly a symptom. It typically will go away, though.
Okay. What does COVID do to the brain? I know that's a strange one, right? But yeah, you've heard that from time to time. Oh, you know, it's, I guess it goes along with that brain fog.
The studies are still out, and I'm sure you can agree that there's some sort of immune response to the COVID virus that may trigger, you know, inflammation in the brain. It may trigger, you know, some sort of response in the brain. I don't know of a study that says directly this is the
cause. And I think some of the vascular effects that you see from COVID, the vasculitis and things like that, mm-hmm. could certainly affect the small brain blood vessels. And of course, every blood vessel in the brain is critical, right? Sure. So any inflammation or any kind of vasculopathy is going to affect the function of the mm-hmm. central nervous system.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here's another question. What medicine should I take if I get COVID?
I can take that one. So that's a great question. We hear it every day. Each person's different. Just as Dr. Young mentioned, every patient is different. I cannot say that this is exactly what you should take when you get COVID. So I also do telemedicine. So we get calls from people in the comfort of their own home. So we can recommend starting with Tylenol, ibuprofen, and certain over-the-counter medications that are safe for that particular patient, because not every patient can take every medication that's out on the market. If you are more at high risk, you can come in and see us in the clinic. We can assess you for your ability to take certain antiviral medications that are on the market. They are actually very helpful and are helping patients feel better quicker and help lessen the severity of symptoms.
Awesome. So the next one here is, and I can relate to this one, is COVID worse the second time you get it?
It depends. Most answer would say the second time you get it, it's a little bit easier, but it also depends on when was the first time. Did you get it during the Delta variant, or did you get it maybe a couple months ago? So it depends. Most of the time, patients are having an easier time the second time around. I will tell you that the more times you get COVID, it can expose you for the risk of long COVID. So kind of the more times you get it, the more at risk you are of developing the long COVID symptoms, such as palpitations, fatigue.
So kind of going back to what you were saying, everybody's mm-hmm. different. You're going to experience these things in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think immunity is important on that too, because you might have some immunity from the vaccines that you got. You might have some immunity from being exposed to the virus. Mm-hmm. There are different strains of the virus, as we all know. It sounds like yes. alphabet soup every time, you know, you hear COVID on the news as to what strain is currently the predominant one. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, your innate immunity, whether it was something you acquired from exposure or a vaccine, also can down your symptoms a little bit. So it's very important to remember that as well.
So let's just want to wrap up maybe with this question here. What sort of lessons have we learned from COVID-19, and what can we, how can we be better prepared for, God forbid, another pandemic or something wild? So
I think that's one of the most important things, because if we don't learn from history, it's doomed to repeat itself, right? We all know that lesson. So I think that there's three key takeaways that I think. Number one was telemedicine. You mentioned it. Yeah. So that it forced us into telemedicine. The COVID mm-hmm. pandemic forced us into telemedicine, which is a good thing, right? So there are some patients that we can see remotely. And if, you know, like you said, God forbid, we have another future pandemic, we have more telemedicine resources in place and then more availability to get patients care in the comfort of their home. Second is education and self-exams. So I talked a little bit about self-breast exams. There are other self-exams that you can do that are part of screening. And so if we educate people when they're not able to seek medical care, or they can't for pandemic reasons, financial reasons, whatever, to be able to perform self-exams, that's very important. And the third thing is at-home screening. So not just self-exams, but we talked about there are ways that you can do colon cancer. There are blood detections now for circulating tumor markers. We're developing all these tests for various different types of cancer. So it may be to the point in the future where if you can't get your breast screen, you can't get your colorectal screening, you can't get your lung cancer screening, you can't get your head and neck screening, you mail in a blood sample and that's your screening.
This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with our audience. And to our viewers, just remember to subscribe by hitting the button here on our channel and keep up with the latest health and wellness information and tips from our experts. Thank you all so much for watching.
Find additional valuable health and wellness information on our resource blog at baptisthealth.net/news. And be sure to interact with us on our social media channels for live and upcoming events. Baptist Health Talk is brought to you by Baptist Health, the warmer side of care.